You're listening to another impactful episode of the Combinate Podcast, the show where we drive for quality in everything, because quality is everything. I'm your host, Subi Sade. I've been working on medical devices, pharmaceuticals, and combination products for the last 10 years, and my goal is to understand. Each week, I sit down with leaders to understand and bring together medtech and biotech in order to examine the roadblocks in development and access we face and bring to light concepts and tools from our industry and others to help address those. Thank you for joining me, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Combinate Podcast. We are graced today and honored by Richard Houlihan. Richard is an IT slash project manager turned regulator turned software creator focused on Udemed. I crack this joke sometimes when it's like a certain subject area. I'll say, if you say this word three times, a person will appear. I feel like if you say Udemed three times, you know, Richard will just show up behind you. So welcome to the show, Richard.
Thanks for having me, Subi.
Yeah. So can you just give a little overview of your background?
Okay. Very quickly, so as not to bore your listeners. I'm 28 plus years in IT. And for my sins, I ended up with the Commission, European Commission, for approximately 8 years. I stumbled in there on a contract and I took over Udemed 2. Most of you won't have any experience of Udemed 2. Only competent authorities in the European Commission get to see it. But in Europe at the moment, that is the legal medical device database. I eventually bullied my way into Udemed 3 when that started. Stayed with the European Commission then until, when was it, April 2019, and I broke out on my own. And udemed.com is where you can find me. So effectively, I've tried to corner as much of the Udemed market as I can. So we do training, software, you name it. And that's pretty much where I am now. We're at this, what, 3.5 years out on our own, plus 8 years of the commission. God, I've been with Udemed way too long.
Yeah. So the Udemed project, is it Udemed or Udemed? Or are both okay?
I pronounce it just Udemed.
Udemed.
Okay. Yeah. And okay. It's only because of listening to people in the European Commission with the French and German accents. I think that's where the pronunciation comes from.
Got it. Okay. So the project started in 2016, right?
No. The project started way before. I'll give you a tiny history lesson. Udemed first appeared in legislation in 2010. In 2000
and when you say legislation,
European legislation, in the directives, in the regulations, in 2011, I rejoined the European Commission for the second time on the Udemed project. I took over Udemed 2. In 2012, I went to a working group meeting where I was verbally assaulted by the member states, did all the little flags on the table. It was quite an intimidating meeting as it goes, but a lot of fun. And they were asking me questions about the new regulations that the commission were working on. They were working on this back in 2012. It was in 2016 that the legislation was adopted. And then they gave this, or no, was it 2016? Yeah, God, it's so long ago. And then they gave this long run-in where we were supposed to release the first version of Udemed in 2020. And that even seems like a long time ago now. But because of decisions that the commission made, because of, they used COVID as an excuse as well, because it was a full moon somewhere else, we're now delayed, you know. But it was supposed to be March 2020 for Udemed to be released. And when I left, just for the record, when I left in April 2019, according to the commission, and they publicly said this, everything is on time. We will release Udemed in 2020. Now, they're still another year away. And even then, I think they'll probably have multiple releases of it.
Because I think the big one that hasn't launched is the clinical investigations module.
That's an ecosystem. Honestly.
What does that mean?
It's monstrous. It's monstrous. When I sat with the developers, one of the things we had to do is, and again, you'll have done this in your projects as well, with when you're preparing the machinery, we'll say, or the devices, you need to get a rough idea at the start. What do you think? How long is it going to take? And it's a finger in the air exercise. So when we did it for the UDI module, these guys estimated 720 days. Now, that 720 man days has gone into probably nearly doubled at this stage. But when we looked at the clinical investigation module, this is all very high level, by the way. This is the high level ones, right at chalkboard time. We estimated 1,440 days and we were still missing loads of stuff to estimate. This thing is an absolute monster. I'm glad I have nothing to do with clinical investigations, by the way.
Why?
It's huge. It's the level of data that's involved. There's timed events going to be in it. Someone's going to send you a document that you have to read, you 7 days to sign off on it. If you don't, the system will kick in some other operations. And again, I'm working.
Okay, so it's not okay. I think maybe I'm understanding. So the clinical investigation module is not a repository.
Oh,
it's
no.
Active.
This is a living, breathing beast.
Okay. So you started talking about the European Commission dialing it back a little bit. So I think you said that there was the 2012 meeting with the European Commission and all the member states. How is the European Commission set up? Like what do those meetings look like?
Well, in my first incarnation with the Commission, I used to hear people talking about going to the working groups. And I thought the working groups were these small little 12 people around a table thing, which is what happened subsequently. But this particular one, there was about 40, 45 people in the room, the little nameplates on the tables, different countries. Each place seemed to bring two or three people along. There was some new people in there trying to make a good impression on their boss. So they came well armed with very, very strong questions. So where I was supposed to do a 20-minute meeting, 20-minute presentation, I bantered with these guys for an hour and a half. I started getting asked questions about the regulation. Now, I was just a consultant. I was just a contractor in there, an IT contractor. But I was lucky enough to have read as much as I could on the legislation before I got there, just in case. You never know where there's a curveball coming. So when I started getting asked some of the difficult questions, I looked to my right, where all the commission officials were sitting, looking for some help, you know, throw me a lifeline, and they looked the other way. So I thought, all right, here we go. So for an hour and a half, I just bantered as best I could with the competent authorities, giving them as much information as I could based on what I had read. So it was a fascinating insight to how the commission worked. But I was just basically left swinging.
Is there, as far as Udemy goes, is there a central language, or how do they manage the different, the different countries?
English. English seems to be the standard now. Now, the French want everything to be in French. They always have done. But when the 10 accession states, the Eastern European states, joined, they predominantly spoke English. Now, they spoke their own languages, obviously, but very few of them had a touch of French. So English has become the most used working language there, which suited me fine because I struggled with English on its own, let alone any other languages.
But then what if is it a situation where it has to be entered in English and then in addition you can add in any other language? Or I'm asking, is it a requirement to put it in English, or is it just from a distribution point of view?
Are you asking about adding the data to Udemy, or are you asking in general?
Input. Adding it into Udemy. Yeah.
At the moment, to the best of my knowledge, it's in English, and you can enter it in you're supposed to be able to enter it in multiple languages, and everything is supposed to be in all member state languages in the end, including Udemy.
Got it. Okay. So then you talked about V1 of Udemed and V2. I think it's at V3 now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
the commission have got a little bit irritated with me calling it Udemed 3. They said it's just Udemed.
I see.
But it is in real life still Udemed 3.
The third version of Udemed.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is the difference between where it started out as only being for competent authorities and, you know, sort of what does the roadmap look like for it?
Okay, I came in at the start of Udemy 2, just after Udemy 2 became legally binding for the incident reports, which the notified bodies would send to the competent authorities. The competent authorities had to enter the data. So the competent authorities would enter all the data. The commission could see it. Nobody else could see it. But the data was and is absolutely awful. There's duplicates like you wouldn't believe. So one of the big things, and this goes to the roadmap question, one of the big things that the European Commission learned about this is you cannot trust people. Right? Because in IT, if you leave a field loose, if you leave a field open, people can put anything in it. But because of Udemy 2 and because of the lack of quality data, these guys learned that you have to lock everything down. So when they came to Udemy 3, and fair dues to the overall business owner of this, he has tied it down so tight. And this is where all the rules come from. This is why we have hundreds of rules. It's because they want to make sure the data is perfect, absolutely perfect. And this is also one of the reasons why we might be so delayed with Udemy, because to create a system so vast and to make sure everything is so perfect in there, the roadmap keeps moving and delays come in. If you're creating a
medical device, sorry, I'm saying timeline aside, I mean, like in intended purpose roadmap, because the first version was for notified bodies and competent authorities. I think you said in Udemy 2, it was for incident reports from notified bodies. And so I just want to understand, like, where's it
going? Evolution.
The evolution, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Udemy 1 and 2, that had your devices, certificates, and the incidents. The only person who could enter any data into it was the competent authority. The competent authority got that data from the notified bodies, right? Mm. So when we now come to the new, we call it, do you know what, it'll be easier. We'll just call it MDR Udemy. So when we're now at the MDR Udemy, you have the actors, the devices, the certificates, a full vigilance module, clinical investigations, and post-market surveillance. And even on the modules where, like the devices module, which was in Udemy 2 and in Udemy 3, it is chalk and cheese. There's an awful lot more data being required in the new regulations. And they're being, like I said, very, very strict on rules, etc.
And so again, so the modules are post-market surveillance, devices.
Let me go the other way. Actors, devices, certificates, vigilance, clinical investigations, and post-market surveillance.
And all of them have are live with the exception of clinical investigations?
No. Vigilance, clinical investigations, and post-market surveillance are yet to go live. They are destined to be on the playground by the end of this year and live 6 months later.
Okay, so certificates was Udemy 1?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I know from Udemy 2.
Understood. Okay, so I'll we'll move on. The because FDA in the US has a lot of different databases, right? They have on the drug side, VAERS and FAERS and others to look at adverse events for drugs. They have recall databases. They have site registration databases, and there's MOD on the device side as well. I'm just wondering, how different is Udamed from sort of what we have in the US? Is it different?
Oh, it's very different. I think is it the good idea, you call it?
The good idea? The
medical device one? Yeah. That would be the closest. And initially, when we had the business analysts going through the legislation and looking at the US side, because the FDA have had meetings and things with the commission as well. So we put a couple of the analysts on it to try and match the field names. So if we could get the same field in the FDA to the same field name in Udamed and the same collection of fields then to make a certain grouping, that would have saved the industry lots of problems.
Sure.
But 3 weeks in, there was too big a difference. Udamed was looking for so much more data. I mean, the way it is at the moment, for the FDA, you could put a medical device on one line of a spreadsheet, right? One line. When we, as in my company, when we put together our templates to prepare the data for MDR and IVDR, etc., the MDR one has 20 tabs. Not one line, 20 tabs. Because there are so many places in Udamed where you can enter multiples. And in some cases where you're required to do so, it was impossible to do it on one line of a spreadsheet.
Mm.
So there was just so much more data, so much more data within Udamed.
Got it. What does Udamed mean for patients? Like what, I mean, since you've kind of been there from the start, I guess why Udamed?
Well, one of the main reasons that we were given for Udamed's evolution, a lot of people think it's just the European Commission trying to claim power over certain industries, but that wasn't the main reason at all. It was transparency. Transparency, 100%. If you go back to 2012 when the PIP case broke, the PIP case was the breast implants with the industrial silicone.
In France, right?
Yeah. There was nowhere that any patient could look, or lawyer for that matter, or doctor, to try and figure out where it's coming from, who, what's the evolution, where's this product, who did it. There's nowhere. Because Udamed 2 is private. Nobody gets to see that. But the transparency I'm talking about, there's a public site that can be searched for devices. Now, any field that any manufacturer populates on the device module is publicly available. Everything. Now, for vigilance and clinical investigations, there's obviously confidential ones because there's business issues in there. But the device module, everything is public. I read one lawyer's comment on it, and he said one of the fantastic things about Udamed is when it's fully functional, when it's fully running, when I go to court to defend a company, all I have to do is go to Udamed first and download everything. He said, my entire dossier is nearly done because everything has to go in there. But he said the downside is when a person wants to go sue a company, there's no more hiding behind shell corporations or OEM manufacturers or anything like that. He said they'll be able to find exactly who manufactured the item that caused them problems. So the big thing around Udamed is transparency.
Got it. Can you talk a little more about the device module?
Device module, 104 data points. Some of those data points are multiple entries. I talk about this all day and I'm just trying to think of things offhand now to say. There's a bit of a blank. It tracks everything from the critical warnings to if you use endocrine substances, if your packages have more than one item in it, then you have to have unit of use DIs on top of your UDI DI, the packaging, the entire structures that leave the factory. if you've multiple structures, you put them all in. It's a huge beast. Mm. It really is.
What does it mean for because there are a few different economic operators in the EU MDR, right? There's like importer, distributor. Is authorized rep considered a economic operator?
Authorized rep is an economic operator, distributor isn't.
But distributor isn't. Okay.
Go figure.
Yeah. So can you talk about like what does Udemed mean for those, you know, let's say a manufacturer who's outside of Europe?
Okay, the first thing, yeah, we go with the manufacturer first. There's no other way of putting this. Udemed is a pain as far as they're concerned. It is an expense. It's a cost. You will never make money out of it. And if you want to sell your products in Europe, you have to be in it. It's just one of those unfortunate things. So for the manufacturers and the projects that they have to do, and it is a project, let there be no misunderstandings here. And again, I would appeal to your audience, do not leave this to the last minute, because there's so many things in there, it'll bite you in the ass, and then you can't sell products in Europe. So for the manufacturer, it's a pain. It's manageable if you get the right training and you get the right tools in front of you. It is manageable and you can get it done quite easily. It's not a one-off project. There's some companies out that go, yeah, we'll supply it once and then we're done. There's still things you have to do going forward if you've new versions, things like that. So manufacturer, it has to be done. It's a pain. The other thing from the non-EU manufacturer, you must have an EU authorized rep. There's no way of getting your data into Udemed without it. There's no way of registering for Udemed without it. You must have an EU authorized rep. And you're going to need an importer. The importers, they used to be physical and fiscal. Now they have a compliance level. The importer has to go check Udemed. They have to make sure your device is in Udemed. They have to make sure your device is in Udemed with the same data that's on your label. You can't specify one thing on the label and a different thing in Udemed. They have to match. The authorized rep, you have to have a mandate with the authorized rep. The mandate will specify exactly which products they're responsible for. And they have to check everything as well, because they now have legal responsibility. Before, the authorized rep was, yeah, brilliant, just pay me money and we'll say that we're your rep. Now there are legal issues. If the manufacturer messes up, if the manufacturer does things wrong and there's an incident and the authorized rep hasn't flagged that this is a problem, then the authorized rep is liable as well. So that's the importer. And the importer has a lot of liability on them as well. Now, the one that isn't an economic operator, but they still have legal obligations, is the distributor. The distributor also has to check. Now, the distributor doesn't have to register for Udemed, but they have to check for data in Udemed, data on labels, everything matches, that the authorized rep is mentioned or the importer is mentioned. I can't remember which one it is. But the distributor has to check things as well. And what the European Commission did with this legislation is they created a police force, because the importer, authorized rep, distributor, they all have legal obligations to check things and they have legal obligations to report them if they're not correct. So in essence, it's the police force to manage the manufacturers.
I think I heard you also talk about the importance of potentially including like location/ maybe GPS coordinates to avoid redundancy.
Yeah, I mean that was something that I spoke about early on in the legislation. Mm. It was around the time of the Fukushima incident. And I thought it would have been a fantastic idea to include the coordinates of factories as well. Because honestly, if I was getting a hip replacement or anything that had any sort of metal in it, we'll say, and there was an incident like the Fukushima one near a factory. I would actually like to be able to find that out. Now, they have included the coordinates, but you're not legally, you're not obliged to include them. They're not mandatory fields. I think the coordinates also would have been very good for these Phoenix companies. You know, today I'm manufacturing this and it all goes wrong, so I close it and put up a new label over the door, and now I'm manufacturing something else. If you had tracked the coordinates in the first place for the auditors, they would very quickly be able to turn around and go, well, actually, last week you were doing knee joints and this week suddenly you're doing something else. So for my part, I thought the coordinates were a very useful thing.
Yeah, interesting.
They didn't make them mandatory.
Got it. Yeah, the reason I asked for that is because you were talking about enforcement. I was just wondering what ended up happening with that. So what's next for UDAMED?
At the moment, on the playground, the vigilance module is there, but they will not put it live until the system is fully functional. The system will not be fully functional. Yeah.
I was just going to say, can you talk about fully functional? Because that's a technical term.
It is for UDAMED. It's a very important term, because the system becomes fully functional when all six modules are live and a notice has been placed in the official journal and 6 months has passed. And then it becomes fully functional. And why that is so important is when UDAMED is designated as fully functional, the vigilance reporting becomes mandatory through UDAMED. You don't have to report them to each individual country anymore. Everything has to go through UDAMED. And why would that cause some companies headaches? If you do not have your devices in UDAMED, you cannot report an incident. You have to connect the device to the incident. And yeah, if you're missing devices and you don't get to report your incidents, then you've got far bigger problems coming your way.
Got it. So vigilance. To close sort of, what is a book that changed your life?
Animal Farm.
Do you know Marla Phillips?
No.
Yeah, so she also said that, and I read it. It's funny. I had 1984 sitting on my bookshelf, and then she had mentioned Animal Farm, and I hadn't read it, and so I got Animal Farm, and I loved it, and then I got through 1984 pretty quickly thereafter. So
It's a good one.
I actually read that 1984 was like the most banned book of all time.
Yeah, it's mad. Yeah.
So George Orwell. Okay. Any others?
Not really. Actually, there is one. It was a Jeffrey Archer story. It's a story. It's a novel. What the hell was it? Cain and Abel. Now, I read that when I was 13. I just thought it was a fantastic story.
Awesome. Cain and Abel. Okay. Where can people reach you?
UDAMED.com.
Got it.
Okay. Nice and simple. There's no getting away from it.
Nice and simple. Well, Richard, thank you for coming on the show. This has been tremendously helpful as I've been trying to understand UDAMED and how it fits in. Thank you, sir.
Subi, it was my pleasure. Thank you very much.